Good evening. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We are broadcasting live from the All Asia Broadcasting Centre here in Bukit Jalil, Kuala Lumpur. Tomorrow is going to be a big day for political developments of the country as a special meeting of Malay rulers will be held on Friday tomorrow at Istana Negara, where the King is most likely to share the decision of all the 220 members of the Parliament in choosing the Prime Minister and, more importantly, the updated reported number of 114 MPs choosing their candidate. The lawmakers have been told to submit their SD directly to the Yang di-Pertuan Agong previously. And of course, given the critical decision that His Majesty has to make, the meeting with his fellow rulers is extremely important, particularly if the numbers are seen to be narrow. Because of this, we have to understand that there are particular developments that might be surrounding some changes into the decision or whether or not decisions have been firmed up. All this is actually quite nimble. And correspondingly, Perikatan Nasional has unanimously agreed to nominate Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri Yaakob as Prime Minister. But Chairman Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin of Perikatan Nasional says that the support comes with a condition. It's a conditional support that he cannot appoint any ministers that are facing criminal charges.
In a statement today, he said the support for his coalition's 54 MPs came with a condition that cabinet members who will be appointed are those with integrity, trustworthy and free from any criminal charges in court. Earlier today, 114 MPs from PN, Barisan Nasional and Gabungan Parti Sarawak GPS as well as independents were granted an audience with the Agong to verify their support for Ismail Sabri to be the next PM. Muhyiddin said PN decided to back Ismail Sabri to ensure continuity in the government's policies.
And of course, while the political developments are still ongoing, initially that you just heard from the show earlier preceding to this one, Ben Sofian as well as Kevin Yee discussing the ongoings of the political situation, we have to take a look into the current ongoings of the nation because there was an announcement earlier today. Fully vaccinated individuals in regions under phase one of the National Recovery Plan will be allowed to dine in at restaurants starting tomorrow, Friday. Caretaker Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin said that this was among several relaxations agreed at the National Security Council meeting earlier today on Thursday. For dine-in activities, Muhyiddin encouraged eatery operators to set up more tables outside for better ventilation. Families where both parents are fully vaccinated are allowed to take their children who are under 17 years old to dine in with them, subject to strict SOP. Weekly and night markets will also be allowed to operate. Other relaxations for the fully vaccinated individuals include recreational and sporting activities that do not involve contact and teams. So here to unpack all this with us is Chris Daniel Wong, President of the Malaysia Digital Chamber of Commerce. Chris, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. We are doing this live, so I'm pretty sure it's very late in the day for you. But can we do a recap into how the business community has done when it comes to the MCO under the Muhyiddin administration? We're trying to pair with what has happened before we can talk about what do you think will happen, Chris.
Well, thank you, Ibrahim Sani, for the opportunity. Well, I think we saw from the quarter-to-quarter numbers reported by Bandagara, we had a 0.5% deficit, even though there is a 16.1% growth in quarter two, driven predominantly by the manufacturing and export activities. But however, having said that, although we have seen the economies have grew in quarter two on such staggering numbers, but businesses continue to be worried and the people are continuing to be worried because of the last 18 months lockdown. A lot of people is in dire financial issues. If I may just sum up, 30% of businesses have already closed shops, especially those SMEs. 30% are in ICU and 30% are right now hospitalized. And 10% is only operating at half capacity. So over the last 18 months, we have seen flip-flop SOP that had not been carefully thought of. I felt that it could have been better. We could have done better, actually. But whereas we've seen that a lot of manufacturing companies were allowed to operate even though at half capacity, but at the expense of the other sectors that is not being allowed to operate, actually. So moving forward, as we know, the exit game plan for the entire industry to operate based on the NRP National Recovery Plan is actually the vaccination strategies. So I think one of the things that we had done well is actually to speed up the vaccination. And from today's report, we have seen that, especially in Klang Valley, cases, extreme COVID cases of hospitalization has really came down by 50%. So that would be my comment on that.
Yeah, what would be some of the wins and fails from the previous administration?
Well, I think among the emerging industrialized countries, we were the fastest to inoculate our populations. Although we seem to start late, somewhere around end of March or earlier April, but we have been quick to inoculate our populations as compared to the rest, especially if you want to compare with Taiwan and also Australia. And the result that can be seen today is actually we have 90% of the population of Klang Valley have received their first dose, and also more than 34% have actually received the second dose. So these are the wins actually from the previous administration. But if I'm going to touch on the unfortunate one, it's going to be a long, long list. So I just felt that there were a couple of decisions made wrongly that we could have been better off. We saw a big explosion of the Siva Gangkang cluster back in July last year, and it is actually due to the lacking of SOP and quarantine, or the quarantine was not strict. So then actually we had the whole northern region that has a lot of these COVID cases that went around, and then in October 2020. We only imposed 3 days of quarantine for those who return from the Sabah state election. So all these two actually contributed to the explosion of the cases. So when we were actually down to a single digit numbers in the middle of last year, but towards the end of quarter three and beginning of quarter four, we saw that the number of cases exploded because of the lag cycle of a quarantine period. And then we opened up the economy, especially for the tourism sector. Well, it is not wrong, because at that point of time, we can see that the cases are low. But then we see the explosion of new cases of 1,600 every day in December. And one of the one last thing that I want to mention is that we left it too late to impose a new round of MCO. It is only when we have an explosion of case and there were a lot of school children who were getting infected when we reopened the schools and the ICU capacity have reached 103%, then only the previous administration actually imposed an MCO since middle of May, and then a full-blown MCO in the month of June. So these are the few factors that causes the cases to be full blown as what we have today.
Chris, it seems like there were many missed opportunities that we could have been taken. What do you think the new administration must think about really hard when it comes to not just saving lives but also saving livelihoods? Do you feel that these kind of missed opportunities must be addressed from the day one of the swearing in of the Prime Minister?
Well, I think that the new administration must learn from the previous administration mistakes. Well, it doesn't matter who comes in this weekend, but the mistakes are very glaring to be seen. And that is why I think a lot of people, especially the rakyat, were actually very apprehensive. They were against the previous administration because of the continuing mistakes. So
I got to hold on to you there.
Sure.
Isn't the new administration filled with the folks from the previous administration? How would you expect any changes to happen when it's filled with the same team?
Well, I think it's very much on political will. Now, every prime minister that have came into Malaysia have their own vision on how they want to steer Malaysia. Now, although I do agree with you, Ibrahim, that we may be seeing the same old faces in the new cabinet, but as I say, it's the political will of the new leader. When the new leadership comes in, they may have new way of thinking, new sets of doing things, and also probably they will be surrounded by different advisors for both healthcare and also for the economic sectors. So we cannot rely on vaccination alone, as over time we know that the vaccine efficacy will actually wear out. As we've seen from the WHO reports, Pfizer's or AstraZeneca's will actually be worn out for the next 4 to 6 months. So the new administration must be resolute. Do we need actually a booster shot? And from there onwards, do we need to continue to have SOP as a mean of public, what we call that, a public order, a general public health order? I think Malaysian as a whole, I would say that within the community, far and by large, a lot of them are not what we call disciplined on SOP. So these are the things that the new administration coming in need to have. They need to have the political will to make things happen.
All right. Finally, I want to talk to you about the movement control order impacting businesses. You were saying that the MCO were slow to be introduced. But having said that, the moment it's introduced, yet again, you know, MCO 2, 3, 3.0, 3.01A and all that, it becomes clear that businesses are shuttered, some of them and many of them for good. The SME Association, for instance, projected up to 400,000 out of 1.2 million businesses are gone. Completely gone, wiped off the face of the earth. Do you think that the MCO is important for us to understand how this is impacting businesses? How do you think the government needs to balance between trying to keep businesses to stay alive versus trying to keep the numbers down?
So I think, number one, we need to continue to have SOP because we need to control the public health order. That is a must. As I said very earlier on, Malaysians need to have this sort of like a daily walking Bible so that they will be kept disciplined on that. And then number two, while we have the public safety health order, we need to rebuild the economy by giving a political stability to foreign investors and also our domestic investors. That is very, very important. For the next, maybe, I don't know, 18 months or 20 months from now, before the next general election, the incoming administration must be able to demonstrate that they have the what we call the confidence vote in Parliament. So I would recommend that when Parliament convene in September, they should actually implement a confidence and supply bill, or maybe not a motion of confidence, but a slew of what we call the policies to be voted, and that will actually give confidence to the foreign investors and to the domestic investors that this incoming administration is a stable government, and it will be here until the next elections, and thereon we will have more new investments coming in. And from there, we can rebuild the economy and we can provide more jobs. And jobs that is lost, businesses that is lost, will definitely be able to make a comeback, because there will be a lot of cash in the market by that time. So we need that, actually. And we need that very badly at this moment.
OK, as mentioned earlier on, as we started the show, tomorrow will be the first day where people can dine in. That's the most psychological change that we can speak of. There's a lot of other phase one relaxation that has been involved in that announcement earlier today. Just a quick recap by JKJAV, as of midnight 18th of August, in the entire country, 75.3% of Malaysian adults have received the first dose. 50% of Malaysian adults have received second dose. 50% of Malaysian of adults receiving second dose translates to 36% of Malaysians having received second dose or fully vaccinated. You know, dalam kata erti lain, one in three in Malaysians are fully vaccinated, resulting in only in two in three Malaysians not yet being fully vaccinated. Do you think that this is a premature move, or do you think that this is good so that we know we can live with COVID as soon as possible, particularly folks in Klang Valley, in other phase one places?
Well, there is no wrong or right answer to this. We don't have to look far. We just have to look at how UK do it, and then we can adopt the best practices on how other countries who have opened up to do it. Well, we cannot continue to live in fear. If we continue to live in fear, it means that for the next 2 years or 3 years or don't know when, we will continue to close up our economies. So we need to gradually open up. And I'm not worried more about this because generally, let's say for example in Klang Valley, we have the largest middle class in the country in Klang Valley itself. So as middle class, they are very well informed and educated, and I do believe that the consumer in Klang Valley will make a very good choice of their own responsible to be responsible on their own health. Whether when they go out, they want to bring their children along with them. So it's a matter of their own judgment, actually. So I think the will to choose is very important. Consumers need to have that will to choose, and they just have to make the best out of it. And for the businesses, well, it is a good thing because now they can open up and they can actually make ends meet, all right, to make a living from them. So they just have to continue to monitor their own employee health so that they can operate in a safe manner, actually. While we are gradually opening up the industries.
Okay, how do you think moving ahead with living with COVID will be under the new administration? If rumours are true that will be under Ismail Sabri, do you think that things are going to be dramatically changed or more of the same of the approach of how the Perikatan government did its business previously?
Well, I think looking at the political development, there were a lot of rebatting and accusation throwing from UMNO to Bersatu that the previous administration has failed to do this and has failed to do that. Now, taking up the words from their mouth themselves, I think since they have said it and now probably they are going to be back on power, so they would have probably taught it well on what they need to do and what they can't do, actually. So it is all up to them, actually, to perform on their best ability, because it is them who is in the first place highlighted the weaknesses of the previous administration, and it is up to them again to make it good on what they had said, actually. So the onus is actually on them to perform as according to what they have said. So only time will tell whether they can perform and heal this nation.
All right, we'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with the Malaysia Digital Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back. Some breaking news. There's some reporters saying that individuals were taken into custody. In fact, Alia Al-Hajri of Malaysia Kini reported that a total of 31 individuals were taken into custody at the Dang Wangi Police Station tonight after being dispersed from Dataran Merdeka, where they had gathered for a vigil in memory of all those who have died for COVID-19 so far. Many of them were seen physically dragged into the waiting Black Marias after altercations between the vigil participants and police personnel on site. They were heard repeatedly demanding the police to state whether they were under arrest, but their questions were ignored. Others at the site include youth activists Abdullah Al-Shatri, Kira Yusri, Wong Yan Ki, and at least six Party Socialist Malaysia youth members. We're trying to get more on this story. It seems like there's a lot of congregation of folks in front of the Dang Wangi Police Station. This story is, of course, ongoing and developing. But while we wait for more information on that, we have with us, joining us this evening, Chris Daniel Wong, President of Malaysia Digital Chamber of Commerce. Chris, as you can see from the news just now, people are gathering around the city. People are gathering around places, having online petitions. A lot of them are unhappy, basically, with how the processes are going. Do you think that they have a cause for concern, or is this a healthy way of them celebrating democracy by allowing freedom of expression?
Well, that's a tough question to answer, actually, Rahim. We are a democratic country, and the people are allowed to express their feelings. But however, during the current SOP, such gatherings are really uncalled for because it may actually create new clusters to break out, actually. So whoever that we have voted for, the 220 MPs currently, they are the one who's going to decide what is best for the country future next few days, actually. So this is a democratic process that we can't ignore. It is something that we can do 5 years once. So we just have to be patient and wait it out until the weekend. But I do believe that we have missed out the chance of a national political reform by the current acting prime ministers. So the reforms were actually, I would say that when I look at it, it's just too good to be true. But unfortunately, it just shows that no party in the opposition bloc is actually sincere in taking the reform although they had been clamoring about it since 2018. And while they were in power and they have a comfortable majority, although it's not a two-third majority, but they have a comfortable minority majority, they were too slow to actually act on this reform as they're not desperate. So I was really hoping at that point of time, a week ago, that they would take up this offer. So at this point of time, there is no point for any oppositions or for any parties to actually go on the streets to actually protest on what is going on, actually. They have to go back and refer to their members of parliament who is in the opposition bloc or who is in the ruling government bloc at those times to actually discuss about it. But we have missed the chance.
All right. Meanwhile, while Istana Negara has yet to announce who is the next prime minister, a lot of conversation and jostling is going on about the number two post based on various statements from various parties and coalitions. It has been strongly suggested that because of this rumours that are going around, some are saying that a deputy prime minister would come from Bersatu. Other names which have been touted for the post include Hamzah Zainuddin, the Bersatu Sekjen, as well as Supreme Council members, Rizwan Yusof, Azmin Ali. And of course, all three members were former ministers in the Perikatan National Cabinet. And then there's also a conversation of whether or not a GPS might be offered the Deputy Prime Minister post. So it seems like, is this more for jostling of power or is this a hunt for stability in the new administration? What's your take on this?
Well, I do welcome if there's going to be a Deputy Prime Minister from East Malaysia, then it would give us more stability. It is actually something that has been long overdue, actually. Especially given the oil revenue contributed by the east of Malaysia. But whoever is going to be the prime minister or deputy prime ministers, that is something that we need to learn from the mistakes of the past. When we have the coalition of Perikatan Nasionals with Barisan Nasional, it is not a component party. It is actually an alliance. So as we can see, a coalition of alliance is actually very, very loose. They don't have a set of do and don'ts. They actually go on a day-to-day, what we call that, decision-making, as compared to the previous Barisan Nasional ruling component parties, because there is a structure in the Barisan Nasional component ruling party in the past. So moving forward, if Barisan Nasionals were to work along with the Perikatan Nasionals component parties, there must be something set on stones. There must be something written very clearly on what is the do and what is the don't. And then when they move forward, there will be a guide on how they're going to administer Malaysia further. And then from there, we can see political stability. And that is very, very important. So it does not matter whether you're going to have this person or that person is going to be the prime minister or deputy prime minister. But the political understanding, the political conditioning, and also the political, compromising should actually be all set on stones moving forward.
Okay, final question to you, Chris. It seems like this political quagmire is going to end very soon. Some might even argue sooner than expected. Is this a welcoming change for once? Or do you think that it's not really going to solve anything? It's the political quarrelling will still continue on even after the swearing-in because, you know, well, there is that vote of confidence event that's going to happen on September 6th or 7th.
Well, I think if you want to use the Malay word, I will use the word dendam. So in politics, there is a lot of ill feelings from one party towards another. And obviously, those who lost or losing their position will always have that ill political feeling. And as I said very earlier on, the hope of the Malaysian in far and by large is actually to have a stable ruling government. If the Member of Parliament wish to be re-elected in the next term, they definitely have to put these feelings aside, these all ill feelings of dendam aside, and work together for a common cause. And then when you face the voters in the future, and then the voters will just pat the back of your shoulder and say, a job well done, because you have put the people above your own personal interests. And I felt, moving forward, this is what the members of parliament should do, actually, for the people of Malaysia, so that we can really actually come up from this COVID conundrum.
All right. Thank you. That was Chris Daniel Wong, president of the Malaysia Digital Chamber of Commerce, joining us live. And of course, like we promised earlier, we're still bringing some developments from the Dang Wangi police station. It's also important that the key factor here is that they were holding a vigil for those that have perished due to COVID-19. And as we all know, over 13,000 Malaysians and those in Malaysia that have died from COVID-19, from which only 4 out of the 13,000 who have died have been fully vaccinated. So that number is extremely low. That statement came from the DG of Health, or the Director General of Health, Datuk Sri Nur Hisham, or Tan Sri Nur Hisham, pardon me. And of course, continue on with the vaccination program, particularly when it comes to areas outside of the Klang Valley, because while Klang Valley has received or has achieved 75% herd immunity for fully vaccinated people, those around Malaysia has yet to hit that number and is still far behind. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done when it comes to the inoculation program. And even when there is no government or there is a caretaker government, the inoculation program still must go on. We'll go for one short break before we continue on our coverage on all the important news that is happening right now in the country as well as around the world. Stay tuned to Astro Awani.